Well, hello there, and welcome back to the Cannabis Man Podcast. Thank you so much for clicking on the show. I'm your host, Don Kleppen, and I created this show, if it's your first time here, to take a journalistic look at all things cannabis. A lot has been changing over the last few years in the cannabis landscape, both in the United States as well as around the world. Very exciting time for cannabis enthusiasts like myself. And if you don't know me, I'm a broadcaster in Chicago. I do news on 720 AM WGN Radio. You can hear me on that station. I was doing business on there this morning during the Bob Surratt Show. I also do traffic for iHeartMedia. You can hear me on radio stations around the Midwest. And I took my broadcasting and my knowledge of podcasting. I ran the Steve Dahl Podcast Network for a while, which was an amazing learning experience for me. I absolutely love those guys as well. Definitely a podcast worth checking out if you haven't yet. The Steve Dahl Podcast with Brendan and Dog. Those guys are amazing. And I learned a lot when I was working with them and running that podcast network. And so I took all of that, as well as my personal experience and interest in cannabis. I've been a user for about 15 or so years, a little more now, started when I was about 18. So I guess I'm about 18 years now of a user. And I've had some breaks in between. I am a fan of tolerance breaks, that is, every now and again. I've got another one of those coming up. I'll talk a little about that later in the show. I'm also going to, as I typically do, share with you an interview with an industry expert. This week, I'm speaking with Dana Mason of Cresco Labs. Now, I'm sure you're familiar with Cresco Labs. If not by that name, then by one of the many brands under their umbrella, which includes High Supply, Good News, Floracal Farms. I talked about some of the flower I've tried of theirs recently. They have a whole host of brands that are bringing excellent products to the marketplace. They operate here in Illinois and other states around the country. And Dana is going to share a little with us about the philosophy behind Cresco's products, as well as how they conduct their business, some interesting products coming down the line, and her own personal story of getting into cannabis and kind of how that goes. So I always love bringing you industry expert interviews. I like to talk with people who are either working for cannabis companies or researching cannabis products, like doctors and researchers, professors at universities. I also talk with policymakers, people who are elected officials or appointed ones that are now in charge of making these cannabis laws and policies that we all are dealing with state by state. I'll also talk with business owners who are creating new products and experiences to enjoy and have some fun with. And that is one of my favorite things about the cannabis industry in the space right now. There's so much excitement and so much movement and innovation. People all over the country are working on things and bringing products and services to market that people like me, who have tried cannabis for years and who know it from the flower and even infused edibles, things like cookies, brownies, the typical stuff. There's a lot of really excellent and innovative stuff coming down the line. I've got something coming to the Chicago market later on that I'll tell you about this episode. Very exciting news on that front, too. I also do the news joint wrap, where I wrap up some news stories that I think are worth bringing to your attention, as well as my strain of the week. I like to kind of review a product that I've been trying this week, and I've got another strain to tell you about that I haven't tried before, and I look forward to sharing that with you as well. If you haven't already, go ahead and hit the like button, leave a rating or a review for the show, however you might be listening to this. I really appreciate the people who have done it already. You're the best. If you haven't listened to the show before, if it's your first time, go ahead and make sure you become a subscriber. You can scroll down to the show description notes and click on support the show. It'll take you to the subscriber page. And once you become that, I'll send you a shout out in next week's episode. You'll get a thank you email from me, because this is a one-man operation, and any support that I can get doing this is very, very much appreciated. And I do appreciate the support that I'm getting from listeners as it is. I love everyone who's reached out to the show with ideas for guests or topics, or just telling me how much they enjoy what I talk about and stuff. That really keeps me going. It means a lot to me. So thank you so much for being a part of that, and thank you for listening. So let's roll into this next episode of the Cannabis Man Podcast.
This is Tommy Chong, and you're listening to the Cannabis Broadcast.
Alrighty, welcome back, and let's roll right into the News Joint Wrap. This is a wrap-up of news stories that are in and around Illinois, and it's all curated for you by IllinoisNewsJoint.com. You can think of it as the joint you can hit for all your Illinois cannabis news and reviews. And let's start with an article from my good friend Jason Brown, who started Illinois News Joint. He has an article headlined here, Illinois Breaks Cannabis Sales Record for In-State Residents. This was published last week. Illinois Department of Financial and Professional Regulation announcing last week the cannabis sales totals for November, which set a new record for in-state resident sales at $105,457,293.74. November's totals are keeping Illinois on track to eclipse last year's total of $1.5 billion in sales, even over that. Jason goes into some of those numbers in a bit more detail. You can look into that if you're interested more at IllinoisNewsJoint.com. Let me get into another article here published by Jason. This was just a few days ago. IDOR, the Department of Revenue for Illinois, drafted administrative rules for cannabis taxes. Now, I'm sure we all perked up upon hearing the taxes of cannabis part of this. It's the latest issue of the Illinois Register. These new proposed and adopted rules mainly address the cannabis cultivation privilege tax for certain types of transactions between licensed cannabis cultivators and licensed cannabis infusers. So these taxes are not really on the back end when you and I go to the dispensary and pick up these things. These taxes are more to do with the transactions between those who cultivate cannabis products and those who infuse other products using those initial products. So the new rulemakings provide for additional record-keeping requirements for infusers, as well as addressing the tax treatment of cannabis and cannabis concentrates transferred from cultivators to infusers. There are other items addressed, including definitions, taxes imposed, returns and payment of taxes, infuser information, returns and books and records, as well as cultivator registrations. If you're interested, you can dive more deeply into this story as well at IllinoisNewsJoint.com. And this one is what I thought you'd be very interested in. Governor J.B. Pritzker signed a cannabis transporter bill into law. Now, this was published on Friday, I believe. Governor Pritzker signed into law Senate Bill 1559, which waives annual license fees for existing cannabis transportation organization license holders from January 1st of 24 through January 1st of 27, and prohibits the Department of Agriculture from accepting new applications for cannabis transporting organization licenses from this year, 23, through January 1st of 27. Now, the big takeaway from this bill, though, at least as far as I'm concerned, because I have mentioned on the show before, listener, about how interested I am in when Illinois will give the green light, so to speak, to cannabis delivery operations. I've been saying since the show started that this was not far away, and clearly we are closer than ever to it. I expect some of these operations to be up and running by next year, by 2024. But for right now, the big takeaway for this bill is that the cannabis transporter organizations, license holders, anybody who's applied for those licenses, there is a hold on any new operations until 2027. That means to me that there are already plenty of applicants for licenses to transport cannabis, and they believe that the market will be saturated in terms of needs being met. In layman's terms, what we should expect is that there are enough delivery operations that by next year, hopefully all of us who will want someone to deliver these cannabis products from dispensaries to our homes, hopefully all of us will be able to have someone do that for us. You can dive more deeply into that Senate Bill 1559 or read about the excellent reviews of different products as well as news stories and events coming up or that happened related to cannabis in or around Illinois. You can find all of that at IllinoisNewsJoint.com. Now I'd like to move on to my strain of the week, and I'm recording this a bit later in the day than I normally do, listener. This is about 1:30 in the afternoon on Monday of December 11th. I've got my coffee here. Normally I like to cut myself off of caffeine by, typically I would say noon, but it is currently today. It is my wife and I's 6-month wedding anniversary. We are both celebrating by going to a Brazilian steakhouse later in Chicago, Fogo de Chão. I'm sure you've heard of it. If not, definitely owe it to yourself to try that out whenever you get a chance. As much meat as you can possibly handle, more than that. And I've decided that I think a little extra coffee to make sure I'm up later to enjoy all of these festivities for our 6-month wedding anniversary. I would like to do that. So cheers to you, a little extra caffeine. Why not just keep this day a little jazzed? You know what I mean? But more importantly, I wanted to share with you my strain of the week. And this week, I am imbibing a Cresco Labs product. This is from their High Supply brand of flower. And I got the strain Rainbows and Cherries. And I really have been enjoying it. I get the popcorn when I typically go for High Supply. Not just High Supply, but really any brand of flower these days. And I do that because I find that there are often better deals available if you are willing to go for the popcorn, which the only distinguishing factor between popcorn and regular flower is that the buds are smaller. They take popcorn buds a little bit closer to the stem so they don't get as large as some of the gigantic flower nugs that you may have seen. Some of these weigh an eighth of an ounce or a quarter of an ounce all by themselves. Popcorn, they're smaller buds, but it's the same flower, and just because of that weird physical change, a lot of companies offer them for better prices. And so that's why you'll normally see me getting some popcorn buds when I'm at dispensaries. And this was no exception when I was at the Wrigleyville Sunnyside to pick up these Rainbows and Cherries. Now, I wanted to tell you, I have been writing down some of my feelings as I go through these, and my notes on Rainbows and Cherries are a smooth smoke holding its substance together in the mouth. I felt a little weight to that air, almost a minty finish, and a clean lemony taste on the inhale. I started making note of my feelings 15 minutes, 30 minutes on into this, you know, journey after I imbibed. A great daytime smoke is what I felt in Rainbows and Cherries. There are some days when I'm working a lot throughout the day that I will wait until the evening to smoke or imbibe, or at least the late afternoon. And then there are other days when I'll smoke in the morning if I don't have a ton going on, or if I, you know, I'm just feeling a certain symptom that I'd like to, you know, get some alleviation from or whatever. There are days when I'll still smoke in the morning, but I think more often than not these days, I'm an afternoon evening smoker. But that being said, Rainbows and Cherries I found makes for a great daytime smoke. Bit spacey in the mind, but my thoughts were fairly clear. But I found it to sort of be like as if my train of thought had a busted transmission, meaning like my thoughts were stopping and starting over and over again. They were clear, but it was like I couldn't get much further than a couple of steps down a thought pathway before I ran into like a gate or some kind of, you know, barrier. And then I was going to have to work my way around it or wait for the engine to kick on again for my next train of thought. Sort of like a path filled with puddles. I kept needing to move steps forward, then sideways, then backwards to kind of get around those. That was my experience with Rainbows and Cherries. Very pleasant buzz behind the forehead, I noticed, and then it spread to my body about 30 to 45 minutes in. Felt tingly in my face, my legs, and my back. Very pleasant. It wasn't anything like rubbery. It wasn't wobbly, but it was just kind of tingly, and it was very enjoyable. And then about an hour in, I was definitely baked, just wanted to watch a movie or play a game, which I am quite sure that I availed myself of later that day. So that was my feeling on Rainbows and Cherries. This batch contains 24.47% of cannabinoids, mostly THCA. It was harvested July 25th and packaged September 21st. I found it to be fresh enough. It didn't dry play out on me too badly. And I wanted to tell you, listener, that if you haven't been going to your local Sunnyside dispensary, and I'm not saying this just because Dana Mason is coming up later in this show, I am serious about this. We talk a lot about Illinois cannabis prices on this show. I've talked about it a lot. I know plenty of people are dissatisfied with the level of Illinois cannabis prices. I always bring up the threshold between quality and price point in terms of weed. I've talked about other state markets like Colorado, Oregon, Michigan, these other state markets that kind of open the floodgates and let anyone become a licensed dispenser. And then you've seen already, not that long from the date of that these markets opened, you know, for Colorado, we're 10 years from when they went legal with recreational cannabis. And already, as I've said on the show, it didn't even take 10 years. They have asked, their unions there have asked for a moratorium on new dispenser licenses. Why? Because nobody is making any profit in Colorado who is cultivating cannabis products. Now, when a state market allows anyone to become a dispenser, it's a race to the bottom because there's no incentive for a high quality product. The incentive is to make something as cheaply as you can and try and get people to buy your stuff versus the competitor across the street. And your profit margins are very, very slim. You're basically just making stuff cheaply and hoping that people will buy it because it's the cheapest, but you're really not making any money from that. And more importantly, there's no incentive to make business owners create high quality product. Here in Illinois, I feel like we have successfully ridden that line, and we're right at this point now, or we're about to be, in the sweet spot where every other state would like to be. What I mean by that is this. We have high quality products on store shelves here in Illinois, but the price points have been falling steadily for much of this year, certainly the last 6 or 7 months. I go to a dispensary at least once a week. Sometimes maybe, you know, it might take a little while longer. Maybe I go once every 2 weeks, but I'm certainly there a couple of times a month. And I have been keeping an eye on prices because, like everybody else, I'm looking at my bottom dollar. I'm looking at my bottom line. And times are tough out there. I think we're all feeling a little bit squeezed. Groceries and gas prices and everything else is a little higher than normal. So I don't have as much to just kind of freely spend on cannabis as I might like. That being said, have you seen some of the high supply deals that are offering an ounce of flower, 28 grams? They offer an ounce of flower sometimes for as low as $125. Now, there are people I understand who may be driving to places like Michigan, like Oregon. Maybe you're in another part of the country or the world, and you're able to get a much better deal than that, let's say, on the black market or whatever. That's fine. Good for you. I'm happy for you. For myself and for the rest of us who, as I've said since the show started, should be buying legal because we want legal cannabis to succeed. And if you want it to succeed, and we all should, then you need to be buying legal. Now, I understand why people were avoiding doing that as the price point made it a non-starter. Maybe your dealer, your plug that you've known for 15 years, is giving you a way better deal than what you found on Illinois store shelves. I'm telling you that the best black market deal that I was getting, even to this point, what I could get on the black market, the lowest would be $150 an ounce. And this is not from somebody that I don't know. These are from very close acquaintances whom I've been buying from for years. These are people that I can expect the best possible deal that they can give me because they will give it as low as they can. They won't even worry about making a profit on what they sell me. They'll just give it to me in order to break even. $150 an ounce was the best that I could get. Maybe you can find something better. Maybe that, again, maybe that 120 number doesn't mean anything to you. But I'll tell you, for me, and I've seen this a few times in the last few months, at the Wrigleyville Sunnyside, which, again, Believe me, you don't necessarily think of Wrigleyville in Chicago to be a place to go to get great deals or cheap stuff. You know, normally price points can be a little bit higher in that area. So the fact that they are offering on sale high supply ounces of popcorn flour for $120, to me, that is a big green flag that says, hey, the price point has fallen beyond even, to where now it may actually be cheaper to go to your dispensary and buy an ounce there. But not only are you getting an ounce, you're getting the label on the package from a reputable distributor, somebody whose products have been checked over by the state to make sure there's no bacteria, that there's no mold or anything weird in this. And not only that, you can get exactly what you're looking for rather than just having to choose between whatever your dealer has. You can go and get whatever product you want from the store shelves. So I wanted to bring that up because to me, this is a major victory. This is a huge, huge celebratory moment. We've been waiting for this for 3.5 years. We've been waiting for this since Illinois cannabis became recreationally legal. We've been waiting for this moment where legal prices for cannabis were going to be equal to or even less than black market prices. And the real sweetness for Illinois is that we got here and we seemed, at least so far, to have preserved our high quality of the cannabis products on the shelves. So that is something that I think Illinois should be taking a victory lap over. As we see these other states trying to kind of slow it down and basically saying, these business owners saying they're not making any money, and the consumers saying that the products on store shelves are now garbage, low quality, Illinois, I believe, is hitting that sweet spot where the prices are low for consumers, low enough, but they're still high enough to incentivize high-quality products on dispensary shelves. That is where I believe we are. Maybe you disagree with me, and by all means, reach out to the show at C-Man Podcast on Instagram and X, or the Cannabis Man Podcast on Facebook, or you can email me, host@cannabismanpodcast.com. Let me know if you think that I'm right, if you've noticed some good deals, and if you're loving the quality of Illinois cannabis, or you think I'm wrong and I'm way out of left field here. Either way, I love hearing from you, and I would be happy to know what you think about this. But in the meantime, I'm going to imbibe in a little bit of this Rainbows and Cherries strain, lovely daytime sativa from our friends at High Supply and Cresco Labs. Cheers. Yes. Yes, sir. Listener, if you noticed a different noise when I hit that, that would be because I am trying a new product from Dynavap. George Brewa, I interviewed him before, who started the company. He's created some great little devices that make dry herb vaping a little more accessible, a little easier, and trying to kind of remove, as George says, the problem of combustion when you're consuming cannabis. As George pointed out, he got fed up with not being able to taste the smells that he was getting from the cannabis strains that he would try and imbibe. He said that he was always disappointed when the cannabis would be burned by the flame of a lighter or however you might light it. So he started developing these vaporizers, and their newest product is called the Woodwind, and it's got a very cool look. It looks like kind of just a little pen, and the classic Dynavap caps are on it, and to me, this really is a suitable replacement for like a dugout, for a one-hitter. The ability to just go ahead and pack this and then light the cap up, heat it up, so that you can inhale wherever you are and imbibe, but you don't have the smoke, you don't have the burning smell, you get a better taste. And, you know, if you haven't tried dry herb vaping, your flower stretches quite a bit further because you're not burning it in whatever bowl or device you're using to smoke out of. When you use combustion, you burn the plant matter. That's just the nature of it. When you're dry herb vaping, you're toasting it. You're not burning it into oblivion. You just toast it. And you can go on and continue to use the flower. Some people I know keep the flower and roll it up into blunts with some concentrates or with some keef or whatever you might like. Other people use it to bake. If you bake edibles like brownies or cookies, you can take the weed that you have vaped, that you have smoked, but through a dry herb vaporizer, and you can keep it when you're done with it. And once you have enough, you can then bake a batch of brownies or cookies or whatever. So it's almost like you get to use the same weed, but twice. It's really amazing. And this is a totally unpaid advertisement. I'm not, you know, a sponsor here. I'm not affiliated. I just love the work that George is doing. And I think if you're interested at all in exploring dry herb vaporizers as an alternative to combustion, you got to check out Dynavap because they're really making great stuff there. And I'm going to talk with George about these new woodwinds coming up soon. I also want to mention something I've been imbibing in this week are some Floracal live rosin gummies. Now, I have never tried any live rosin gummies. This was my first experience with it, and it was my first time trying any Floracal edibles as well. I went with the Tropical Punch flavor. It's listed as a hybrid between Sativa Indica. 10 gummies with 10 milligrams of THC each. And I was really fascinated to find out a little more about the process of making live rosin gummies. Now, I went to Sunnyside's website, and they offer a little description. They've got a cool little comparison article, which shows some differences between live resin and live rosin. And reading the live rosin portion, they say it offers a more pure, refined representation of the plant by using a solventless ice water extraction. This unique process collects the same ratio of cannabinoids and terpenes that the original plant offers. Live rosin extraction is more intensive and time-consuming than live resin extraction, but the end result is a more complex, nuanced flavor profile, a smoother consumption experience, and a cleaner, more robust edible. They mention that live rosin does not use chemical solvents, so it's considered a more natural, clean product, and they offer this final line: think of your usual THC experience as watching a movie on TV, but live rosin is like watching it in a 3D movie theater. And I gotta say, I'm mostly through this pack of 10 gummies that I've tried here. I've got like three left, but I've been taking them just one at a time throughout the last week or so. I have mostly been taking these at night, and I've really enjoyed the pleasant buzz that comes from them. It's a nice head feeling. The body high is pretty good too. Again, nothing too extreme. It's not like my legs are rubbery or anything like that, but it's just a nice pleasant tingly buzz through the head and body. And then I found myself kind of just jetting off to sleep. It normally just sends me right downward. But I did try one of these the other day in the middle of the day, and I found that it made for a very pleasant daytime buzz. I just played some video games, I watched some stuff, and it really made the day a pleasant experience. It was a nice sort of, day drinking kind of vibe. And not so much that I was put off of doing whatever I wanted to do. It's not as though I was inebriated. It's not as though the gummies kept me from doing anything I wanted to do. It was more like they just added a nice, as I said, kind of tingly under vibe to the day. And I really enjoyed these. I'm definitely going to pick up some more. I want to try some of their other flavors. But I got to tell you, I wasn't sure what to expect with this live rosin experience. But when they talk about the solventless water extraction and how that leads to a more nuanced flavor profile, I gotta say, I'm certainly not like a sommelier. I'm not somebody who is able to detect, hundreds of flavors in one compound. But I will say these gummies, these Floracal Tropical Punch gummies, did taste better and different than most of the gummies I've tried. Mindy's, which I discuss a little later in this episode with Dana, Mindy's are great. They are high quality. They're a classic. I still love Mindy's, but there is a difference between these Floracal live rosin gummies and the taste and texture of your Mindy's gummies. So something that is definitely worth trying out if you haven't tried live rosin stuff, I definitely do find it to be worth it. A little bit pricier than just your average gummies, but again, I think it's worth it. It's just like we talk about with a lot of these cannabis products, you know, part of the fun and excitement of this time of legal movement and all of this innovation that we're seeing, part of the fun of this is that we get to try fun new things, and people are innovating and they're making new products and experiences for all of us to try relating to cannabis. So yeah, if you feel like turning the party up a little bit this weekend, go ahead and head to your local Sunnyside, get yourself some of these Floracal Farms live rosin gummies. I can definitely vouch for the Tropical Punch, like I mentioned, but I'm excited to try some of their other flavors. And if they lean more heavily to indica or sativa, you know, I'll probably try one of their sativa ones. But either way, these I think are definitely worth checking out. And I gotta say, I'm just impressed with this Floracal Farms brand. The flower I've tried, and now these live rosin gummies, they're marketed as a premium brand. And as Dana talks about later in the episode, Floracal started in 2014. It's founded by Karen and Drew Duvall, and they grow cannabis in accordance with nature. They set up shop in the hills of Sonoma County. And they say the couple has dedicated their studies, their time, and all their efforts to the craft of cannabis. And I got to tell you, again, this is not a paid endorsement, but it's just my own experience. There is a premium effect here. You know, when you go to a nice restaurant or when you try something that is a better experience than what you're used to, you notice that. And if you like it, you know, if it's worth it to you to pay that little extra for the premium, then you're going to go back to it. And I got to say, just for my money, I will be going back to Floracal Farms for their flower. I love that Astropop Sativa, and I really enjoyed these Tropical Punch live rosin gummies as well. Welcome back, listener. My guest today is someone who is going to tell us about a company that we're all very interested to learn about. It's one of the largest publicly traded cannabis companies operating in different states and is doing a lot of great things right here in Illinois. I know you're familiar with their brand of dispensary, Sunnyside. I've certainly mentioned the Sunnyside that I go to in Wrigleyville all the time. Big fan of what they do there. I've gone to the River North location as well, and I've never had anything but great experiences. And they boast some of the one of the highest portfolios in terms of cannabis brands that they sell. Some of these brands I know you're familiar with. Those include Cresco, High Supply, Floracal Farms, which I've been talking about recently. Really love that premium brand of flower. The Good News and Wonder Edibles, along with Mindy's and Remedy as well. And here to tell us all about Cresco Labs and some of the things that they work on and what we can all get excited about in the future is the Vice President of Wholesale Marketing for Cresco, Dana Mason. Welcome to the show, Dana.
Hey, thanks for having me. Good to be here.
Thank you for coming on. And did I have that right? You know, the brands of Cresco and your title with them, Vice President, Wholesale Marketing, that kind of thing?
Nailed it. Got it all right.
Great. Okay, cool. I like to check that after hitting record for some reason, as opposed to beforehand, but I don't know. It's just something that I do. But anyway, thank you for jumping on. I appreciate it. And I've been looking forward to talking with you for a while. I do frequent the Sunnyside in Wrigleyville all the time. And I'm a big fan of Cresco's products. I've definitely gotten a ton of Mindy's. Me and my wife love partaking in those. And then the Floracal Farms, I just was able to try some of those for the first time, and I absolutely love them. So I just kind of want to ask, you know, how did you get into, you know, working in cannabis, and what's it like working at Cresco?
Yeah, so answering the first part of how did I get into cannabis, so I'm someone that built my career within the marketing space. So I spent a few years at Nielsen right out of college, really learning marketing insights. I was always on site, so worked across a few different CPG categories. From there, actually went back and got my business degree at University of Chicago, Booth. And then from there, I went and worked at MillerCoors. So a lot of my background has been in really traditional CPG structure, but always had my eye on the cannabis industry. And when you think about what it means to be a marketer, marketing really is understanding and meeting consumer needs. And the fact that there was this whole industry that was just being built that has such a really interesting and deep-rooted culture behind it, I always say it's kind of the marketing dream to be able to build that. And there was something really, really exciting about the idea that my successes as well as my failures, so all of the trials as well, would help to contribute to building an entire industry and learning along the way. So as someone who's always been incentivized and interested in the ability to build and learn, while simultaneously helping people to find the products that speaks to them and is right to them, it really aligned very, very well with everything that you get within the cannabis industry day to day. And then as you think about Cresco, Cresco's mission since the beginning has been all about normalizing and professionalizing cannabis. And I think that there was something that always just really spoke to me within that, because as you build an industry, there's so many different ways to do it. And it was really important to me to be working alongside people in a company that really believes in building the industry the right way. So it's been great.
That's awesome. Great story. I appreciate you sharing that. And a lot of cool things that I want to touch on in there. I totally agree with you that, you know, there's few spaces as exciting as the cannabis one right now, just because of the existing culture that was there and sort of the momentum that, you know, has for years been building to push this toward a more legal and normal, part of society, part of day-to-day life. And so I know people are hungry for that. And then, you know, the way that you were, you know, kind of talking about normalizing it and making it professional, as you say, that's kind of along the lines of why I started this show itself, is because when it was legalized here in Illinois, I just noticed that the conversations were so much more about the pop culture stoner jokes and like the lowbrow kind of punchlines about, you know, cannabis and what the caricatures of a stoner was like, as opposed to the, you know, talking about the possible medical benefits or the quality of life improvements that it can offer. And so that is sort of why I wanted to start having these conversations with people like you, because talking about it in this way and making products like Cresco does, and having such a professional approach, that seems like a really grassroots way of trying to end the stigma and bring this to the light in a way that alcohol is, and other substances that we kind of lean on in our day to day.
Yeah, absolutely. Couldn't have said it better myself.
And on that note, you know, I think it's really interesting in your case, having worked at Miller Coors, as you mentioned, and doing marketing for them. Do you, you must think of this in terms of, do you see similarities between the alcohol industry and what cannabis is doing, or in terms of marketing, you know, is that similar for you and your approach? What is your approach in terms of like how to speak to consumers of cannabis, and is that at all similar to consumers of alcohol?
Yeah, I think the things that are similar to alcohol are, one, just the regulations and the responsibility that it requires, that is required to be a marketer in any one of those industries, especially if you think about the age gating and making sure that you are being very responsible and thorough within everything that you're doing to make sure that you're speaking to the appropriate people and that you're not inadvertently speaking to people that are not of age to be consuming these products. So taking that responsibility seriously is something that I definitely learned from working within the alcohol industry that's able to carry over. On the other side of the coin, I think the other biggest similarity to alcohol, which isn't untrue for other CPG categories as well, it's just the passion for the industry. I was always blown away in the previous brands that I worked on before coming into cannabis, at how passionate people are about different brands as well as the category itself. And it's unbelievable how much you see of that within the cannabis industry, even though it really has been a short lifespan compared to many other industries when you think about legalization as a whole. So those are other parallels that they come to life in different ways, but certainly very similar. Now, where it's different, so everything similar to alcohol as well as other industries, is it always starts with the consumer. What are their needs? How are they leveraging the products throughout their daily lives? How are maybe what parts of their daily lives are not being met or needs aren't being met by the industry currently that we can look to fulfill. So that approach is still very similar to what you see in other industries. What's unique is the different market regulations, as well as how quickly this is changing for the consumers, as well as the regulations as well. So within other industries, often you're thinking about all of the regional dynamics and different demographic dynamics as well as you're looking to fulfill that consumer need. But within cannabis, you're not only trying to understand those dynamics, but also dealing with the reality that some states only permit medical use, which is a very different need than the states that permit both recreational as well as medical usage. So balancing that out as well as the different regulations and how everything can come to life in each market.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense. And I appreciate you laying it out. You know, a lot of great points in there as well. On the last one, you know, operating in multiple different states, you mentioned some states are medical only. Here in Illinois, it's adult rec and medical. And, you know, obviously we have an expanding state-by-state market here, even though it's still kind of a patchwork thing. More and more states are taking the plunge and allowing cannabis in some form all the time. And so I guess in your experience, like what is it in terms of operating in Illinois, for instance, what is that marketing here where it is adult rec and medical? What's that like versus a state that's medical only? Just in terms of how you are building these brands and how you're looking to kind of sell it. You know, it's is there any difference between Illinois cannabis consumers and those in other states, let's say?
Yeah, so I think the first step is really thinking about what the primary role of each of our brands are. So for example, our Remedy brand tends to be very wellness and medical driven. So in our medical states, you see a larger presence of that brand because there's a larger portion of that consumer that is looking for brands that are specifically medical in nature, that are really on the nose with, this is my ailment, what's the best way to help myself to feel better for medicinal purposes? Then for some of our brands, it may have a little bit more dual functionality. So for example, Mindy, since you mentioned that, really the everything behind that brand is it was founded in partnership with the James Beard Award-winning chef. Everything that Mindy's does is really meant to deliver on its promise of being the world's best tasting edible. That is certainly true for a recreational consumer, but that's also true for a medical consumer, just because the reason that someone is using that product might be more for medical purposes, it doesn't mean that they want to have to sacrifice the taste or the premium nature of that particular product. So again, it's that consumer need is the same. It's just the way that it's used and the way that it manifests itself might be a little bit different market to market. And the education of how and when to use might also look a little bit different, knowing that how it's sold and who's purchasing it has a little bit of a different need there.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I get that. I think that's a great point. I mean, even if, as you said, even if somebody's using this medicinally, that doesn't mean that they want it to taste like crap. And Mindy's certainly does not. You know, Mindy's is the best. As I mentioned, it's every flavor of theirs. I always, you know, I've ran through all of them and there's always a Mindy's container around our house. So I totally agree with you. Those are the best. And it's Cresco has a lot of great brands. And, you know, you mentioned, you know, when you were talking earlier kind of about the excitement and what different brands, even though the cannabis space is newer illegally than alcohol is, the enthusiasm for certain brands and the brand loyalty is still, you know, big. And Cresco has, I think, some of the brands to which people are really excited for and to which they're very loyal. For instance, High Supply. I feel like whenever I talk with people, they're always happy with the price point and the quality of the High Supply buds. And I mentioned Floracal Farms as well. I think that, you know, I found my experience to be like it was sort of a premium bud, because everything that was sort of advertised or what I was expecting from like a heavy indica like Jealousy or like a happy sativa like Astropop, I felt it stronger. You know, it was, there was nothing faint or subtle about like the advertised symptoms or the terpenes or anything. So I guess in terms of establishing these brands and that kind of excitement, you know, where do you, what is Cresco, what's the philosophy in terms of like, you know, is it, you have alcohol, which has some 100 proof stuff, or let's say you've got, you have your light beers, you have your IPAs, you're targeting different demographics there. What's Cresco's philosophy in terms of establishing products which are targeting different demographics in that sense? What do you look for in terms of, you know, establishing that brand loyalty at different tiers?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you think back to the cannabis industry, even as short as 5-6 years ago, price tiering was kind of at the beginning of it, and there wasn't that much price differentiation when it came to brands. So if you think about all other industries, that tends to be one of the first places that people differentiate, knowing that there's consumers that are willing to pay more for a more premium experience, as well as consumers that say, hey, I really want to make my dollar go the farthest. Give me the absolute best value. So Cresco was really the first to come up with a price tier system with the launch of High Supply. It was one of the first value brands within the cannabis space. And since the induction of that brand, it's always been about the best bud for your buck. So it really is about, how do you make sure that we continue to give those consumers who are looking again to make the most out of their dollar without having to sacrifice for quality? So really thinking about who that consumer is, what we speak to on it, and making sure that we live to that process. So for example, on High Supplies, you won't see a ton of massive marketing campaigns against that brand. And that's intentional to make sure that we are truly taking out all the costs of the brand to make sure that that value is really passed down to the person that's buying it. And then on the other end, so then of course you have Cresco in the middle as your mainstream brand. But then we did notice that there was also an opportunity for a more premium brand. Simultaneously, we met Karen and Drew Duvall out in California, who founded Loracal, and we really saw that everything that we believed a premium brand should be existed within Loracal. So through a partnership, and we still work for the company, are deeply involved, launched Loracal nationwide. So it was a California brand that we chose to take into other markets that really is all about that crafted experience to get you that ultra premium quality within vape as well as edibles. We use rosin as a more premium process as well. So it allows us to reach different consumers through different price points while also satisfying what quality means at those different price tiers for each of these specific consumer groups.
Right on. Yeah, that makes sense. And I hadn't thought of it the price tiering way that you kind of spelled out there. I do think that Cresco was successful in that because, like I said, I do think that the High Supply, for instance, I think that definitely has resonated with a lot of the consumers out there, at least the ones I'm speaking to here around Illinois. I just hear such, you know, positivity associated with that all the time, and it's very cool. And some of the other ones you're talking about as well, Floracal and Mindy's and Good News and Remedy, all of these are, you know, they're meet different needs for different people, and I think that people appreciate those options. I think that's one of the things I know I was always excited about when cannabis became legal and when different states were doing this, the options that were going to become available, you know, instead of just needing, like for myself, you know, instead of being limited to whatever my dealer had at the time, you know, and it was just like, okay, I'll take that. You got Blue Dream again? Okay, cool. I guess I'll take it because that's what I have to take. But the ability now to go into dispensaries, and as you said, you know, it's professional and it's normalized, and to be able to go into a place like a Sunnyside, I still get so geeked every time I go in there just to talk with bud tenders and look at the different menus on the wall fall and get excited about new products that are coming down. These options are what is part of anyway, what is making this whole movement so exciting. And on that note, I know I don't want you to, you know, reveal anything that's ahead of time, but, you know, what are some, I guess, other products or maybe brands that Cresco is looking at into the future that they're going to bring to consumers, or at least that the company's thinking about? Anything that you can talk about, I mean, just in case, you know, people want to get excited about something new.
Yeah, I think the thing that we're always looking at, really in strong partnership and led by our cultivation team, is new strains for sure. I think that's always one of the first things that we're looking at, is how do you continue to bring back some of our favorite Landrace strains that people are familiar with, that might not be specific just to our brand, but that are truly embedded within cannabis culture, as well as mixing that along with Cresco-owned or Cresco proprietary strains that are truly unique to our portfolio, and being able to use strains as a way to help bring cannabis into many, many different use cases, as well as day parts. So really thinking about it that way. And then when you get into some of our manufactured products, so of course, more strains within our vape portfolio as well, but also different flavors within our Good News brand is also always something that we're thinking about, and just continuing to figure out how we can drive new news. That's kind of what I'll say on all of that. So always looking for it and finding the easiest ways to help expand.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think obviously people are always psyched to talk about new strains. I think that's a great point, as well as flavors of edibles, like with Good News you mentioned. And that, I think people are always looking forward to, you know, look to hearing about those kind of things. Dana, related to marketing, I'm curious, you know, since you're talking about, you know, brands that are, you know, and products that are manufactured in-house at Cresco, as well as, you know, cultivations that maybe you see outside of it, you know, like FloraCal, for instance, that vibe with the way that Cresco does things, and that maybe you then bring into the umbrella of brands. I'm kind of curious, do the cultivators come up with the names for these new strains, or are there any that somebody like you in marketing are able to come up with? Have you ever come up with any name for these strains? Are you going to do that in the future?
And pitched ideas. We tend to have our cultivators be the one to name our strains. Again, really to help ensure that we're maintaining the integrity of the plant and keeping the culture of this industry whole, is our cultivators are the ones that are putting the plants in the ground. They understand the heritage of each of the strains. So to ensure that isn't lost within the names, and that the names are truly speaking to what this strain is, we trust our cultivators to be the ones to actually do the naming for that very reason, just to make sure that we're not getting too much into marketing jargon, but really helping to preserve that these are OG cannabis growers, and making sure that they are leaving their mark on these strains as well as the people who are putting the plants into the ground.
Right. I think that's a great point. And I think that sort of authenticity, that commitment to it, I think that's part of what stands out about Cresco. And I do think it's probably something that is also resonating with people. It is genuine. And I think that you talk about getting too into the marketing with stuff. I think that, you know, people can sniff that out, especially, you know, like OG, whether they're growers or just users of cannabis. I do think that, you know, there is a, there's a BS meter. You know, there's definitely a sense of like, okay, was this the grower who made this, or was this a marketer that came up with the name of the product? So I think that's a cool, it's cool that Cresco has that in mind, and you guys kind of let the cultivators do this. One last question for you, Dana. I just want to, you know, Illinois is a state that people always talk about in terms of multi-state operators. You know, this Cresco, along with some other competitors, you know, got their start here too. What would you say, as somebody who's in marketing? We've talked a lot about different philosophies Cresco has, but in terms of its competition, you know, what makes Cresco unique
if you could sum it up, you know, in the best way, what do you think that makes Cresco unique compared with some of the other large cannabis companies operating out of Illinois?
Yeah, so one of the things that I'm proudest about is kind of what I said in the beginning to why I joined Cresco in the first place, which is that mission to professionalize and normalize cannabis. And I think something that's always just really impressed me and something that's been important to me as I contribute to the success of the company is making sure that everything we're doing is not just meant to benefit the company, but is meant to benefit the industry. And I think that you've seen that come to life in a few different ways. But since we were just talking about High Supply, again, one of the first to launch a value brand, but being able to celebrate and sell through our Sunnyside stores, some of our competitors launching similar brands, but the fact of being able to celebrate of, yes, we were the ones to start that, and maybe the competition for us has increased. But overall, that is a really positive win for the industry, that there's more variety at a more affordable price point for people to be able to enter the industry on, which is really exciting. So being able to take that lens in everything we do and not get so distracted by, well, what are they doing? What are they doing? But really thinking about it through the mindset of, is this going to be the best thing for the industry itself? And are we moving things forward in the right way when so many times in business, it's so tempting to do things that might be the easy way or what everyone else is doing. So I think that's something that's always been really important to Cresco since its founding that continues to be true, that has allowed us to differentiate and really to, within the world of marketing, to ensure that that consumer is always first. Because again, it's all in the spirit of trying to expand the category and to help normalize and professionalize it.
Great points again, and well said. And I think you've been successful as well as the rest of the team at Cresco Labs in doing just that, creating brands that the consumers are responding to and different price tiered systems that help loan themselves to that identity and that, you know, the giving consumers more options to explore and continually get excited about this cannabis industry, which is all new and just growing, but also leading it forward in the right direction. I think Cresco is doing that, and I think Dana Mason, you're contributing to that as well. So, listener, do go out to your Sunnyside if you haven't been recently and give a look at, if you haven't tried any of the great brands that we've been talking about, definitely do yourself a favor and go check them out, and you won't regret it. Dana Mason, Vice President of Wholesale Marketing for Cresco, thank you so much for stopping by today and talking cannabis with us. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. It was great talking to you.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And there you have it, listener. I want to thank again my guest, Dana Mason of Cresco Labs, for jumping on here. Such great insight into the marketing of cannabis, as well as how unique her perspective is. You know, listener, if you've been listening to the show from the beginning, you know how many times I've compared the alcohol industry and prohibition, you know, back in the 1920s. I've compared that to today's cannabis prohibition, as well as the experience of taking something from the seedy underbelly of criminality and moving it into the light of day of the acceptable legal marketplaces where you can buy it at a storefront and there are ways of checking products for quality and stuff like that. I think it's so cool that Dana did some marketing work for alcohol and that she's now here in the cannabis industry and she can take that experience of marketing those kind of products and bring them here. And I loved what she was talking about in terms of the price points, and I've got to give Cresco credit. The price tier system that Dana was talking about in terms of value assignments, like High Supply is kind of like the Bud Light of cannabis. Then you have Floracal Farms, which is like the premium, the top shelf stuff, like your Patron tequila or your 100 proof whiskey. They are establishing different value and price tiers for cannabis products the way that we have had for alcohol for a long time now. And I think that's great. I think that if you're in the mood, if you've got a friend in town or you've got, you know, some celebrating to do and you feel like spending a little more money to get a premium product of cannabis, by all means, you should be able to do that. But if you're like me and you're somebody who's smoking day after day, week after week, and you need to make sure that your supply is up to snuff, but you're maybe not able to grow it yourself or you don't, you know, want to or whatever, having the value price system of the high supply, for instance, gives you the ability to, as I said, maybe go buy an ounce for $120, but know that it's still great quality product, that you're not buying dried out swag. You're actually going to be able to go home and enjoy this stuff, but you're not going to be, you know, kicking yourself for spending too much money. I think that what they're doing in terms of establishing that value tier, I think it's an excellent framework for cannabis products moving forward, and I hope to see it become popularized and just that sort of thing happen throughout the country. So cheers, good on Cresco, and thank you, Dana Mason, for joining the show and sharing your perspective on all things cannabis and some really great marketing tips in there as well. One more thing I had for you this week, listener. This is an exciting development around Chicago. This article was published just yesterday, December 10th, from when I'm recording this. And this is an Axios Chicago article published by my friend Justin Kaufman, a fellow alumni of WGN Radio. Headline from Justin reads, "Chicago liquor stores are selling THC-infused drinks." Not will be. They are. This is right now. THC drinks are hitting the shelves at Chicago liquor stores due to, as Justin says, a legal loophole. Why it matters, Chicagoans are able to pick up six packs of THC seltzers outside of a licensed dispensary as local business owners cash in on the buzzy beverage trend. Justin also says THC seltzer brand Wynk, W-Y-N-K, has secured a deal with Louis Glunz, a beer distributor active in Chicago for over 100 years. That distributor has helped stock the drinks in several Chicago liquor stores, including Binney's and Garfield's. Justin quotes Phil McFarland, a warehouse beverage company's general manager of THC beverages, saying, "As a guy who came through the craft beer wave, this feels very familiar to me." He goes on, Phil McFarland does, to say, "In 5 years or so, this is going to be as pervasive and accepted as craft beer has become." If you haven't heard of it, Wynk has been around since 2021, but had a hard time cashing in at local dispensaries, so the company reformulated its drinks to use hemp-derived THC, making it legal to sell in liquor stores under the 2018 Farm Bill. This bill is continuing to pay dividends, listener. You know, if you've listened for a while, that when my wife and I were on our honeymoon on Maui over the summer, I was able to buy cannabis products there, thankfully because I could register as a medical patient, but also because of the Farm Bill. There were many more cannabis shops, CBD-labeled shops, that were selling very low THC percentages, under 0.3%. That's what they need to be in order to be in the legal threshold under that Farm Bill. But because of that bill, which, by the way, has been extended for another year, because they normally refresh these every 6 years, this one, they found no reason to refresh it. So we get another year at least of the 2018 Farm Bill. And because of that, we, along with other people in other states, I know Minnesota's doing this as well, THC-infused beverages that are hemp-based are legally sold now in liquor stores around Chicago. I will leave it there. I will share the Axios article, as I always do, with the other articles that I mention on the show, and you should definitely read the rest of it and give Justin Kaufman a little tip of the cap if you feel like it. The guy does great work over at Axios, and this is exciting. I'm definitely going to go out to some liquor stores and get myself some THC-infused beverages. The holidays are coming up faster than I think any of us is comfortable with. So I'm definitely going to be going out and getting some six packs of those. Those can be found, as we said, outside of dispensaries. Just look for that Wynk, W-Y-N-K brand there. But also, there are going to be some other ones. You know, in time, while this Farm Bill is still allowing hemp-derived beverages and other products, we're still going to be able to use them, whether THC is legal, whether cannabis is fully legal in your state or not. If it falls under that 0.3% THC threshold, it is protected under the Farm Bill because of their hemp provision. So it's a very exciting thing. I love that Chicago's doing this. The THC beverages that I've tried, the ones I tried on Maui, as well as the ones in other states like California and Michigan and all that, I've really liked what I've tried so far, and I look forward to trying these and picking up some of those in Chicago liquor stores as well. That's going to wrap it up for me this week. I really appreciate my guest, Dana Mason, and I appreciate you for listening. Be sure to check out those articles I mentioned at IllinoisNewsJoint.com, and go ahead and keep an eye out at your local Sunnyside for some of these deals they've been having. This Rainbows and Cherries deal that I got, as well as the $120 for popcorn ounces that I told you about, that is not a once-in-a-while thing. That's not like a one-time thing either. I expect these to continue, and I expect to see more and more of these in the coming months and years as, like I said, we reach this sweet spot in Illinois cannabis of high quality and lower prices than we're used to seeing. So very exciting time, and happy holidays to you. I appreciate you listening. If you feel like giving this holiday season, go ahead and scroll down and leave a nice rating or review for the show. As I mentioned, this is a one-man operation. Any of that positivity really helps. It helps the show stand out on platforms like Apple or Spotify or wherever you're listening. Ratings and reviews help let them know to recommend the show to other people. And of course, if you're interested, become a subscriber to the Cannabis Man podcast so you never miss a new episode and you find out what I'm talking about week to week. Any subscribers do get a shout out, their name credited in the next episode, as well as a big thank you email from me, because it's very much appreciated. I love the support, and I love the listeners who have been engaging with the show since this started on April 20th of 2022. And we are rolling onward as this cannabis journey continues for all of us. So lots to be excited about and be thankful for as we're rolling through this holiday season. So thank you very much for everything you're doing. Keep going, and we'll talk next week on the Cannabis Man podcast. Bye-bye. Cannabis Man is 100% originally crafted by myself, Don Kleppen. Original theme music written and composed by Yusu Kim, a.k.a. Goodson.